the Transverse Network, this is The Transgender Show, an interview program about self-acceptance and discovery. I'm your host, Emily. This week on the show is Dr. Amethysta Herrick, a writer, podcaster, and activist whose work focuses on the origin and nature of identity. Amethysta Herrick, PhD, is a writer, podcaster, and activist. Her work focuses in the origin and nature of identity, especially gender. Emmy has been a geneticist, a chemist, a software engineer, and a manager, but her latest challenge to date is taking on the entrenched fallacy that identity and gender are only of concern to the LGBT community. Instead, she teaches that identity is an ongoing process every human engages in throughout life. In her spare time, Emmy speaks about the scientific definitions of both sex and gender. So everybody, welcome to the show, Amethysta Herrick. Hello.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
I am very good tonight. As always, show night really gets me amped up and fixes all of the ills in my life. I always feel so much better. So I hope that it is able to do the same for you once you get over that initial the initial butterflies that you were telling me you're feeling.
Yeah, I'm still a little fluttery, but I'll get there.
Jumping into your story with my first and favorite question, I usually ask how did you choose your name, but I think I'm going to change it just slightly. How did you find a name that you felt suited you?
That's an even better question. So I knew this question was going to come up, and I'll tell you, we've been on the air for what, 5 minutes now, and I'm gonna make an absolute fool of myself telling this story, which is okay because I've come to the point now where I say, if I'm going to make a complete fool of myself, lean into it. So the name, you asked, how did I find it? I made up the name. There may actually be other people in the world named Amethysta. I don't know. But I made it up from the amethyst, the gem, the amethyst, because my favorite color is purple. Maybe my presentation provided a hint. Lean into it. But my favorite color is purple, and I always liked gems. You know, like in role-playing games, you know, you get loot. In gold, it's like, meh, gold's okay, because you can melt it down, make a chalice, melt it down again, make coins again. But like a gem, you grind that guy up, you're left with, I guess, no gem. That was going nowhere. So I made up the name from the amethyst, and this was in early 2021. And I made it up for a video game character, an online video game character, because I wanted a little purple cat girl, like you do. So after that, you know, I played that character for about a year. I mean, I'm still playing that character. But in early 2022, I had, it's kind of a complicated story, so I think I'm just going to call it a major spiritual experience. Sounds ominous. But a spiritual experience, and at the end of it, a very wise and powerful and insightful woman told me, hey, well done, now you're ready to be Amethysta. And I said, okay, you know, sure. I mean, I wasn't going to use that name or anything. And she turns back around and she goes, oh no, you are Amethysta. And I said, no, I mean, it's a video game name. Like, I'm not using this name. I'm not going to use the name. And she looks me straight in the eye and she goes, no, you are Amethysta. And I looked her right back and I went, yeah, okay. Fully intending not to use it. Because I'm thinking, what, I'm going to go down to the courthouse? She's going to check the paperwork? Hey, this doesn't, what are you trying to pull on me, right? But like I said, this was still early 2022. I had not even really planned to transition, but I had a Discord account for the character, and I started communicating with some people on a writing website, and I just kind of used the name by default. And by November, when I was filling out the paperwork, it had started to work. I did not find the name. The name was bestowed upon me by this powerful woman. It was unexpected and unintentional at best, but it worked. It started to work.
Was there a period for you where you had to kind of adjust to it then? Because it was the character name, and then you've got to take this on you and figure out if it fits and feels right for you. Did you take to it pretty quickly?
Oh gosh, that's another really great question. So when I made this, when I made the cat girl, so for a reason I really don't know, at the very beginning of 2022, I wanted to write fiction. I had written a little bit of fiction when I was a graduate student, but I was a chemist, I was a software engineer, you know, we're not supposed to be creative people. And so I never tried to exercise any creativity. But at the beginning of 2022, I came up with one joke, honest, one joke that had to do with New Year's Eve and had to do with an alarm clock for that matter. And I thought, gosh, I'm going to write this story. So when I started thinking about the story, I'm like, oh shoot, I've got to establish a character. I've got to establish a timeline. And I have like, you know, a couple of other little jokes in there that I'm going to have to bring in. Then I have to make like an antagonist character. And so I just started writing more and more of this character's story. I think I ended up writing somewhere around 50 of these stories. I'm not really sure, somewhere around there, 50 to 70 of these stories. And I wrote them, for what it's worth, the way I wish I could have acted if I were that little purple cat girl. And it ended up really kind of, I was going to say I internalized that, but really what I did was take that young girl who just happened to look purple and cat-like, but I took that young girl and externalized it. So becoming Amethysta, like picking up that name, was actually pretty easy because I'd been writing the character for, you know, 6 months. A lot of background story of this character. So honestly, no, I sort of slipped into it and it all just worked. It was really kind of creepy when it comes down to it. So
I love it. I was trying to think of some other follow up questions and I'm just like, I'm bailing on that. And so my brain just shuts down on me. I like to work backwards in this part of the story. I like to find out first, you know, when you realized you were trans, and then trace the steps backwards. So where were you in your life when you realized that you were trans, that term applied to you?
I have two answers to that question. So forgive me on this. Everything is going to be like bifurcated, but, so I grew up with three sisters and my mother, and my father was absent, was pretty absent from our lives. I know he worked nights, and then my parents were divorced when I was pretty young. So growing up with three sisters, I really just kind of figured I was one. I was the same as them, you know, that I was just another sister. Certainly by, you say, 8 years old, I was realizing that, you know, there was some distinction between them and me, but it wasn't honestly until about puberty that I looked down and I went, you know, what's happening here? This was not what I expected. I was going to look like my two older sisters. How come this isn't working for me? So that was, maybe I'd call that the first time, but when I was a graduate student and I was in Georgia, when I went to graduate school, and I remember waking up on a Saturday morning, Sunday, it doesn't make a difference the day, but I remember waking up and I was looking out the window at this, you know, pale blue Georgia sky. And I thought to myself, you know, I like men and I like women, and there's a word for that, and that's bisexual, and that's me, and I'm okay with this. And quickly following on that thought was, oh, because I am both woman and man. And there's a word for that, and it's, we'll figure it out later, and I'm okay with that. So I would have been 24. That would have been 1994, I guess it would have been, you know, 24, 25, that I really came to peace with it. That, and it was, you know, not, I don't know if it was an egg cracky kind of moment. It was really more of a, oh gosh, this is okay to acknowledge a gender that is not how the rest of the world has treated me for 24 years. And that's my two answers. Hopefully that wasn't too convoluted, but
Well, and then the follow-up question, like I said, is usually what were some of the breadcrumbs looking back? You sort of had that from the start. You just yes. believed to be like your sisters and had that moment of shock and awe in puberty of like, what is happening here?
Right.
So let's go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to change topics. So if you have more to say on that one, we can finish up before we move on.
No, I'm finished with it.
So let's move on then to coming out. What was your process there? How did you start to broach that subject with the people around you?
I have two answers to that too. Sorry. So when I got my first girlfriend, I think I was 19. I might have been 20. This is when I lost my virginity, which isn't cool. I know it, but you know, hey. And we actually moved in together. She actually moved from Los Angeles down to San Diego, which is where I did my undergrad. She moved in with me. And since she moved in with me, I had access to her clothes. And I'd been dressing in my sister's clothes. If any of my sisters are listening, I'm sorry. I mean, it's what I had, right? Maybe you already knew. The point is that I had access to this girlfriend's clothes. And believe it or not, we were actually pretty close to the same size. And she bought, I remember, it's from the Broadway. She bought this great burgundy kind of bodycon type dress. And so I would wear it. And at some point she recognized, oh my gosh, you know, you're kind of stretching this out. And I thought, I don't know if that's me, honey, but it's untrue. If my first girlfriend is watching, I apologize for that too. The point is that all I'm trying to say is that she broke up with me. She said, wait, what the hell? You know, you're wearing my clothes. That's wrong. She broke up with me and she moved out. And I thought, so I knew her because she was a friend of two of my sisters. And I thought, there's no way I want my sisters to find out what I was doing from her. Mm-hmm. So I called each of my sisters and I called my mother, and all three of my sisters kind of gave me this one variant of, oh, well, you know, yeah. Cause I called them up and I said, listen, I wear women's clothing. You know, this is who I am. I have this feminine side. All three of my sisters gave me some variant of, yeah, well, yeah. And my mother, I think, cried. I didn't call my father. When I actually truly came out, you know, when I was going to transition, I called the people who were close to me, some of them, and that included my sisters and my mother, by the way, and all three of my sisters. I said, yeah, I'm transgender, I'm going to transition gender. And all three of them kind of went, oh, well, you know, yeah, you know, which bugs me that I'm like, the rest of my family's going, we knew this. What? My oldest sister actually said, I've just been waiting, you know, for when it was going to happen. And I think my mother cried. But I called several people, and this was 2022. I was 52. That first time, I think I was 21, maybe 22. And that reminds me, when I called my oldest sister, I said, you know, I'm transitioning gender. She said, oh, well, yeah. She goes, don't you remember we had this conversation 30 years ago? And I went, I can't believe you remember the conversation from 30 years ago, but she did. Mm-hmm. Those are my two stories. I feel like you asked a different question than I answered, but hopefully that was close.
No, that's good. And that, you know, that was how you sort of opened the floor for the topic and started talking about the cross-dressing.
Yes.
What was it that drove that? You know, you didn't get this acceptance from your mom. Your mom cried about it. You didn't get it from your girlfriend. But it seemed like you had it from your sisters. And then of course your older, the eldest sister is saying that, you know, you had this discussion. What do you think it was that caused a 30-year gap between those two periods?
I mean, I can answer it in two words. I mean, it was mental health. Mm-hmm. When I was in graduate school, well, before that, so I've had dissociative episodes, you know, going back, I mean, as far back as I can remember, there's been other voices talking to me and talking to me in my head. In fact, interestingly, my first girlfriend said, you need to go talk to a psychologist. So I went and I saw somebody at the UC San Diego, like health center, you know, whatever, the student health center. And the guy, you know, I made some mention of these voices and he goes, wait, you have voices in your head? And I said, yeah, wait, don't you? And he goes, no, that's not normal. And until then it was the same thing. I thought everybody had these voices in their head. When I got into graduate school, I was very lonely. I had grown up in Southern California for, you know, 23 years. And going to Georgia, small town Georgia, was a huge culture shock. And I was lonely. I was very depressed. And I was also early 20s, which is a phenomenal time for dissociative disorders to go wild in, you know, people assigned male at birth. And they went wild. And I had, you know, episodes where I'd find myself across town kind of thing and you know, car in a ditch or something. And your question was, why did it take 30 years? It took 30 years because I could never get anybody to trust that some of the things that I experienced or believed could actually have occurred. You know, you introduced me with you know, the honorific PhD and when you go to a psychiatrist and you say, yeah, I hear voices in my head. I had a psychiatrist say, I don't believe you. And I said, what motivation would I have to lie about this? One moment. He said he didn't know what motivation I had, but he really couldn't believe that somebody as highly functional as I am could experience what I did. Hmm. So that occurred to me for a while. And in 2001, I actually looked into the process. I mean, I was going to transition in 2001. And at the time, the process required two psychiatrists, not psychologists. And this was even in Los Angeles. I believe it took two psychiatrists, it might've been three, to evaluate me. And I knew there was no chance in hell I was going to pass that. And I wished I could have, but I it seemed like so much trouble that it almost wasn't worth it. I don't know how better to put that. After that, my mental health kind of, you know, floated up and down. It was really, you know, the woman who's now my wife, did probably the best thing anybody has ever done for me. And that's call the cops on me, after I had engaged in some pretty bad self-harm and had me committed. It was kind of embarrassing, but it also meant that I could talk to a psychiatrist who was willing to listen to me and say, oh, how about that? These are the things that you experience. We call that schizoaffective disorder. And here are medications for that. Those medications are not great. I think I'll just punctuate that. Those medications are not great. I don't think I completely stabilized. You know, I still struggled a whole lot. And finally, in 2012, my wife and I had a son in 2011. Well, she did, I didn't. And in 2012, I had a really bad psychotic episode that lasted on the order of about 6 weeks. And when I came out of it, I said, I'm not gonna do this anymore. I'm gonna fix this. And one of the things that I was going to fix was I am going to be a man. I have a son. Sons need fathers. Fathers are men. Ball this up, tie it in a little bow, throw it over the shoulder. And it built for a decade until, you know, this little purple cat girl made it apparent to my wife that there was still one thing left that I had to address, which was my gender. And here we are.
Wow, what an evolution. How is it that you have been able to deal with, in all this time, the dissociative disorder?
I honestly don't know. I think that I know that there has been a lot of instability. I know that I have exhibited a lot of instability. My wife has put up with a lot. I believe she's listening right now. So thank you, honey, for everything. I think I am I am a very stubborn person, and I am a very principled person. If I say I'm going to do something, it will be done. And whether that takes 80 hours a week destroying myself, like I did for many, well, a few anyway, startup companies, I will do it. And I think actually, if you can believe this, the dissociative, being able to dissociate is actually a value there. Because if I started to feel pain from working 80 hours a week, I could just dissociate and let, you know, the amethysta that could do the work, and the rest of what was feeling the pain go away. So it's interesting. I think the dissociative episodes have been useful in my career, not harmful.
Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting to go from, you know, having this revelation that you gave to your first therapist and saying, hey, I hear these voices, and have them not believe you, not understand it, not have any concept of it, because, you know, it was clearly for them tied to very disturbed individuals that were clearly, yes, not functioning well in society. Right. And so they had a lot to learn. But clearly in that, you were in the same boat. You had a lot to learn. You had a lot to deal with. You had medication that in some ways helped, but complicated things in other ways and was just problematic. And so then, you know, you're left with just sort of dealing with it on your own. I hope that you've had a good bit of therapy through that. I really do appreciate how our culture, at least in some areas, seems to have taken to this idea of multiple identities and you know, dissociation and things like that. And I guess I sort of have a follow-up. Do you still have those episodes where you find yourself doing something that you don't remember starting, or in a place that you don't remember going to? Or through your process and you know, learning about it and sort of dealing with it, have you been able to control it in a way?
Control. So in 20,
I'm very obsessed with control for myself, like that self-control and all this, like that's been the major cause of a lot of my problems. So I might still have some of that hanging on and be coming from that perspective. So forgive me in that.
No, actually, well, see, the thing is that I almost wondered if you'd like gone through some of the articles I've written, but when I was, before I transitioned, the primary reason my wife ultimately said, look, you need to address your gender identity. It was on winter solstice, 2020. I'm pagan, so winter solstice is our holiday. Winter solstice, 2021, I had an episode. And these episodes had gone from like finding myself across town to I'm going to lie in bed and stare at a wall in sort of this semi-fugue state for a weekend, because I could work 80 hours a week for like 7 weeks and then it would fall apart and I'd lie in bed and I'd stare at a wall, half catatonic, and then I could come back together by the time Monday showed up so that I could go back to work, thankfully, at least for the company. So I had something similar to that at the end of 2021. And once I started transitioning, those episodes, I also used to have terrible migraines for that matter. I think my body would get tired enough that it would go, okay, I'm just going to shut down. And so I'd get a migraine, lie there, fugue state, etc. But those have abated since I began transition. And the reason why I don't want to use the word trigger. The reason why I heard the word control in particular is because these are episodes I have not been able to control until now. Having started transition, my ability to, when I started transition, first of all, I realized I had never truly experienced emotions. Well, anger, you know, I'd gotten angry, but that's all I had. I never really experienced joy, never really felt happiness. I don't think I ever really felt love. And I started, and it didn't take more than a couple of weeks before I realized this after I started hormone therapy, that I'm now feeling emotions. And for that matter, physical pain, that part has not been great, but the ability to feel emotions, I can actually detect when I'm disturbed. I can detect what I'm feeling and I can identify these things. And I was not able to do that. The ability to do that alone, I think, you know, was a major, you know, the word revelation seems a bit bombastic, but it was like, and here's another great cliche. It's sort of like when Dorothy wakes up in Kansas or in, you know, Oz. I woke up, you know, it was like waking up and I went, oh my gosh, it's not all grayscale. There's yellows and there's reds and look, there's blues and hey, look, I'm purple now. And who knew? That took a little while, but so I actually had an episode. I don't even remember what triggered it, but I was going down into an episode and I thought to myself, no, I'm not going to do it. And I pulled myself out. I asked my wife that night. I said, hey, can we go out to dinner? And she was like, sure, we can go out to dinner. Probably expecting, you know, you're going to lie in bed for all weekend. Don't. Sure, we'll go to dinner, you know. She'll go pick something up. But I got up. It took me about 2 hours, 3 hours to get out of bed, to take a shower, to get dressed, but I did it. So I've gone from going away and driving across town to be in a ditch to acting like a normal person. I don't know what I want to call that, but yes, I can control them. I don't take any medications. I got off those medications in 2014, I think it was, with meditation, with running. And now that I have transitioned gender, I have assumed control of what goes on in my head, more or less.
That's amazing. Yeah. And we talk a lot in on the show about, you know, realizing your true self and really getting in touch with who you are. And you are able to feel emotions and experience things that you weren't able to before. And it makes sense that, you know, there's so much trauma in our early lives. And there's a need, at least on a very small level, for us to dissociate a little bit from who we are in order to play the role that others have told us we need to. And right. You know, we just talk about how, you know, you find yourself and there's this congruence that happens finally where everything makes sense and you see the world through a different lens and everything's brighter and more colorful, all those great things like you said. And yes. It's wonderful that has hit you so profoundly that you know, you've been able to kind of conquer something that had its control of you. And I think that's a very beautiful thing. Back to the things we were talking about before. First off, what do you feel was more difficult for you, finally accepting the fact that you were trans and being able to move forward with that, or telling people that you were trans?
As far as acceptance goes, I think I did that when I was 4 years old. It just made sense to me to be a girl. Mm-hmm. At 24, I thought that it was just fine. Like I think I'm rare in this regard. I've never really felt shame for my gender. And, you know, I really, in fact, I celebrated it when I was in graduate school. So I don't know that I ever went through like a period of mourning or like a need to accept who I am. And we can go back to this if you want, but what I really needed was motivation to do it. No, permission to do it. That was the obstacle I set. It wasn't a matter of accepting who I was. It was allowing myself to express it. Mm-hmm. On a quick tangent, unless you want to go, because I can continue on that one.
No, as we talked about a lot on your show, I am the queen of tangents. Let's go. Let's go that way.
Okay. So accepting who I am was completely easy. As far as giving myself permission, that's where I've always struggled. The reason I have struggled with that is because, you know, there's a book, and now I'm forgetting both the author and the title, which is going to make it tough, you know, to link this in the show notes. But I think it's called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. I believe that's the book. Both of my parents, and hopefully my mother's not watching this, but both of my parents are very needy. My father's gone now. But both of them, my father was very needy. My mother is very needy. And that meant from a very early age, I had to, all of us children kind of had to care for them. This is still the case. My mother's 84, you know, this year. And what that did was set up inside me the idea that, you know, I'm not allowed to have things. I'm not good enough to have certain things. I'm not allowed to have certain things. And this sort of just kept going. When I was in graduate school, though, I went ahead and went, because I had no friends. I was starting over. I mean, I didn't have any family there, didn't have any friends there. So I was kind of like, well, I would just do whatever personality I choose. And so I dyed my hair black. I put on all black clothing. I was doing lovely Eye of Horus makeup, you know, not like a daily look, because that might have been a bit excessive. But, you know, I was who I was. And it seemed okay. You know, I was okay with that. Then I actually met somebody, we got married. And when I met her, she said, I told her, listen, this is who I am. You know, I'm going to dress up and I'll show you, this is who I am. And she said, shouldn't be a problem. And then I dressed up and it was a problem. So now I've been, you know, rejected by my first girlfriend and rejected by my first wife. And so I believed I was not allowed to have that. I wasn't ashamed of it, but I was not allowed to have it. When our son was born, like I said, I put it away. I wasn't allowed to have it. Really what has been difficult has been agreeing that, I'm going to end up crying while I say this. What has been difficult has been believing that I am valuable enough to do any of this for myself. I didn't quite cry. So telling people has always been pretty easy. I mean, I told you about a 6-week dissociative episode I had. I have no problem with going up to somebody and going, yeah, I like men too, you know.
Did you have anybody in your process of coming out that accepted you in a way that you weren't expecting, that supported you, that was surprised you?
Well, it would be remiss of me not to mention my wife, who I am confident on our first date. I said, this is who I am. I dress up in women's clothing. And she told me, oh, I'd like to see that someday. And I thought, yeah, right. That's what my first wife said. Like, that's true. But it was my wife who encouraged me to begin investigating my gender identity again. It was my wife really who gave me the permission. And that's a poor way to put it, because I had to give myself the permission, but she gave me the permission to give myself permission, for whatever that's worth, to ultimately to transition. So it would be remiss of me not to mention her, but there is one other. I saw that question actually on the list, and I thought, no, really nobody. Everybody responded, but then it struck me, my father-in-law, and I'm curious if he'll ever see this. I told you when I came out, I called like close family, and that included my parents-in-law, and both of them are conservative politically. Both of them are Catholic. Well, I guess my father-in-law is Lutheran, but it's Catholic light. It's close enough. And he would disagree. I'm sorry. But they were both, they had a lot of questions. And I said, listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send an email, because I had written up like a PDF of here's what I'm doing and here's why I'm doing it. And I sent out the PDF, said, here, you know, here's what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And about 10 minutes later, I got an email from my father-in-law. And I thought, I'm just not going to go and look at this, because it's going to be mean. It's going to be, you're going to hell. It's going to be mean. And I don't want to go and look at it. And I went and looked at it, because, you know, I waited about 2 hours. And finally I said, oh God, what'd he say? So I open it up and it says, you know, these are big changes. All we ask is for a little bit of patience while we get used to it. You know, love your grandpa. And I just broke down crying. You know, I don't know how well they support everything that I'm doing here, but just the fact that they said they were going to try was massive. I cannot tell you how much. I've never had the conversation with him. I kind of hope he does see this, at least this piece of it and of this interview, because yeah, it was such a huge, I don't want to say validation. It kind of made me think, if they think this can be all right, then everything's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I love that. They provided that bridge for you and that sort of inclination that this is something that you can do and you can be out, you know, and be accepted. There is possibility of that. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Let's jump tracks just a little bit here and get to our really ethereal question. I like to change things up in the middle here and get to this one. What does gender exploration, what does gender transition, what is this process meant for you on a deep level?
If you would ask me this question a year and a half ago, I don't think I would have an answer, or not this answer. Because I began transition, I started thinking about identity much more deeply. I mean, ultimately that I started writing about it and you know, speaking about identity, public speaking about identity. For me, the transition, well, in general, identity and gender are ongoing processes. These aren't things that we just, you know, we do once and suddenly, bang, we're done. This is the person we'll be from now until, you know, the next life. These are ongoing processes. And what transition has allowed me to do is, I mean, ultimately, to give myself the permission to discover who I am. I mean, just to give a couple of you know, maybe goofy examples. I was hoping I had a fairy sitting around me, and I don't. But I've always loved fairies. The little stupid, not stupid, sorry. The little Victorian, see, there I was. I was going to say something so that I didn't deserve it, right? Or if I did deserve it, it's because it's stupid. And that's untrue. What is true is that little fairies, little Victorian flying around Tinkerbell fairies, are awesome. And I always loved them. I always loved Tinkerbell. I always loved those fairies. And I've got a ton of fairy stuff now. I have more purple. I'm just going to do this again. I have more purple stuff than I can shake a stick at because, damn it, I love purple. And that's okay. If I could find a purple fairy, I think that would really be the end all be all, wouldn't it? So, oh, tell me you're going to pull one up.
No.
I was hoping you were bending down to. Here you go.
No, sorry. I don't have a purple fairy handy. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But that's what transition has given me. It's given me the ability to give myself permission to look at those things that I would have considered foolish long ago, or at least pre-transition. And that is, there is nothing like the ability just to say, I am who I am, and who I am is okay. In fact, more than okay, you know, good, maybe even worthy of love. I better stop before it gets a little bit maudlin, but that's what it's meant.
Maybe worthy of love. I love that. Just a little qualifier, like maybe, like, you know, possibly, not even probably, just possibly. Well, we've made some progress, Amy. We're not fully there yet, yeah. But
I have years to go before I'm done with this life. So, and I have a lot of things to do. Now I have the ability to go and do them. And now I have the ability to experience them and to feel them and to enjoy them and to remember them, to cherish them. Yeah, I'm going to get maudlin.
We're allowed to be happy here on this show. Like, it doesn't all have to be, you know, doom and gloom. And these are the struggles and terrors that I went through. We can talk about the good things, and that's important too. So
yeah, I don't want to break down crying yet again. So
it has been so long since I've had a guest cry, and I used to think it was a really good thing, and kind of like not really push for it, but right. Not avoid it. Yeah, we're not on network TV, so we don't need the emotional draw of that. But
right.
As you've moved through your journey, well, as you looked to get into your gender journey, were there certain goals and things you had in mind of like a script for how it needed to go? And along your process, have those goals shifted? Have you changed sort of what your priorities were?
So the quick answer is yes, because yes, I had goals. I am the kind of person who's really bad at like working without a plan. I really need a plan. I need to know where I'm starting. I need to know where I'm going. With transition, somewhat surprisingly, and actually I think this is another I think this is another major change that I've experienced since beginning transition. I'm less rigid. We haven't really spoken a lot about graduate school. When I was in graduate school, I had waist length, dyed black hair, and you know, had great makeup. I've always had kind of curvy hips. There are a lot of reasons behind that, I'm sure. But when I would dress up in graduate school, I could go dancing and I mean, Southern frat boy types would buy me drinks. They loved me. I mean, I called myself Selena at the time. Now that's my middle name. But the guys at this Bone Shakers bar in Athens, Georgia, loved me. And so I knew. So I'm not sure how to say that, but I knew how to be feminine. So when it was like, okay, well, I'm going to transition gender, you know, it wasn't like this start from zero kind of thing. I had been growing up watching my sisters doing similar things to my sisters and with my sisters. That came out sounding weird. And I don't know. Yeah, clip that part out, right? But Oh, shoot, we're live.
We're live, sorry.
But, you know, doing similar things that my sisters were doing. And so, you know, I guess where I'm going to go with this is that I did have goals, but I also knew largely how to accomplish them. I'm also, you know, before I retired from the software field, the technology field, to be a writer, I mean, I was like in executive management. I mean, I was making plans for a department kind of thing. So like figuring out how to do a social transition meant just going and looking up the research, writing down all the things I had to do, and then executing. Easier said than done. I know that, but I mean, much more easily said than done for anybody who's going through a transition. It's like, yeah, right. Don't say that, because everybody's going to think it's easy, and it isn't. But I kind of made a plan. And as the plan came together, things just kept, they just kept happening. I've had friends tell me, you know, you had like the easiest gender transition I've ever seen. I took to estrogen very quickly. You know, I have all my hair, you know, all my hair. I haven't had any surgery at this point, and I'm 53. Oh gosh, I'm going to be 54 in like 6 weeks. So things worked out well for me and easily for me. And I think in part that was because I knew where I was going, having done this before. And I made a plan. Did the goals change? Yes. I had an article early on, in which I used the phrase, I know I will have affected, or the sentence, I think I'm going to paraphrase it wrong, but I said, I know I will have affected a successful gender transition when I can look in the mirror and see enough of myself to accept the rest of myself. And that happened by, I started hormone therapy July 7th, 2022, 2 days before my wife's birthday. And by about November of that year, I could see enough of myself in the mirror. And much of that was coming from inside, not because of estrogen therapy, not because of surgery, not because of anything other than I was being who I was. And so while I kept on going, I hope I get a D cup. The goal, well, you know, it's true. Mm-hmm. While I was hoping for that, I was okay with being able to look in the mirror. I remember at one point, it was November, December, maybe even January, but it was not that long on HRT. I walked into the bathroom, I peed like you do. Sorry to have to bring you into my life like that, but I peed, but I got up and I was washing my hands and I looked in the mirror and I went, I'm not bad looking. No, I am pretty. And then I dried my hands and I went and sat down and I thought, I can't believe it. I said that I apparently have affected a successful gender transition. I'm finished. And then it kept going, but
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that you basically project managed your way through transition. I think that's great.
I had a whole Gantt chart, you know, all of that. It turned into Kanban, but it started off with like a Gantt chart and yeah, it was project management.
Well, let's get into our heaviest questions at the end here. The sort of our big hitters. What do you think you've been able to accomplish because of your transition?
Oh, it's even hard for me to say. I thought I was just going to spit it out, and I didn't. I love myself. I love myself. That's the biggest thing that I have accomplished. Everything else is secondary.
That's an amazing thing to have achieved. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
What is your favorite thing that you've learned through your gender exploration, either about yourself or the world around you?
I think the favorite thing that I've learned is that there are a lot of loudmouth people out there, a lot. But they are in the very, very much in the minority. Loudmouth people who hate transgender people, who want to persecute transgender people, who want to kill transgender people, they are in the minority. I go places and if people find out I'm transgender, which happens, of course, you know, you get clocked occasionally. But when it happens, oftentimes I have people asking me questions. Really, why? You know, how did this work? Why this? The favorite thing that I've asked or that I've learned has been gender is not as rigid as I believed society considers it. There are people out there who love us or don't give a damn, you know, that we're doing this. And maybe that's my parents-in-law, I don't know. But that's the my favorite thing in terms of you know, what I've learned through this process.
What advice do you have to pass on to young or closeted trans folks out there as you've gone through this?
The foundation of my work, I'm stuttering on this. The foundation of my work is two like major pillars. The first, and so if I were going to offer any advice, I think it would be these two things. Now, they're generic for just humanity at the moment, but I'll turn them into you know, transgender. I'll make them transgender. But the first pillar is that identity is ours, only ours. There are social expectations, but society cannot dictate who you are. Only you can determine who you are. From a transgender standpoint, that means if you ask yourself the question, am I trans enough? It's already a moot question. You are who you are. You are who you know you are. And the thing is, you can discover that, which leads to the next pillar of you know, the work that I do, which is that our highest moral obligation is to discover and to manifest who we are in our lives. And that, at least from a transgender standpoint, means, you know, if you want to wear a skirt, if you think wearing a skirt would be cool, go get a skirt. You want to wear a dress, go get a dress. You think that pants are going to be better for you, wear pants. You don't like eyeliner, don't wear it. You manifest your identity. But it requires experimentation. It takes finding that person. So that's the advice that I would give. First of all, your identity is yours. If you are transgender, be transgender. And second, you have to manifest it. You have to, because otherwise you're going to be unhappy. And don't be unhappy. Go be a pretty girl or a handsome boy. And be able to say at the end of your life, at 53 years old, whatever, 54 years old, I love myself. I don't have a mic to drop.
Nope. Just make sure you can get to that. I love that. That is wonderful advice, especially when it leads to that piece of self-love that we're all searching for.
Yeah.
Well, Amethysta Herrick, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated this opportunity, Emily.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Transgender Show from the Transverse Network. Watch this show live Tuesday nights at twitch.tv/thetransverse and later on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thetransverse. Keep up with our guest Amethysta at genderidentitytoday.com. If you love what we're doing and want to help support the Transverse and get access to exclusive content, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/thetransverse.